Hey, everybody, it's Mark. I'm back with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And as usual, I want to start the pod by encouraging people to go to my website, www.markpattisonnfl.com. And there is now a link that says follow the epic journey, which I'll be going to Mount Everest here in a month or two. Leaving on March 30th and landing in Nepal a few days later, and then onward to this amazing expedition that can't wait to go, not only going up Mount Everest, but coming back down to the death zone, 26,000 feet, and then back up Lhotse. Should be quite the challenge. Also, on that website, you can find my podcast. Always appreciate the ratings and reviews that actually helps the popularity of the show. Amazing people doing incredible things. Please go to iTunes and give some love there. It would be greatly appreciated. And we continue to fundraise for Amelia's Everest, the Lhotse Challenge. We've now gone over our goal, but we continue to fundraise. I'm so grateful for the Raiders for throwing in some money, as well as the NFL Social Grant Program in terms of contributing money and ultimately awareness to that campaign. So if you want to go and you want to donate towards this, you can do that. There's a link on the philanthropy page, and it can take you right there, as well as when you go back to follow Mark's epic journey, there's a box where you can fill in your email. And I would appreciate if you threw your email in there and you can keep up with what's going on the mountain when I'm there. And speaking of the mountain, I have got an absolute rock star. This guy is the Michael Jordan of climbing. Seriously, I am so grateful to have Lakpa Rita Sherpa on the pod today. Lakpa, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
This is just an incredible, incredible treat for me to have, especially as I prepare to go. So this is almost as educational for me about what I'm about to get myself into. This is the first time I've been to Nepal, coming up here shortly. You have climbed. Listen to this, everybody. This guy that we're talking to today, he has climbed to the top of Mount Everest 17 times. He's the first Sherpa to climb the seven summits back in 2009, which is amazing. He now lives in Seattle, Washington, which happens to be my hometown. I went to a big high school up there, Roosevelt. Love all my Teddy friends and that whole community. And then on to the University of Washington, where I played football, and then, you know, went on from there. But I want to start back where you grew up in Nepal. Mm-hmm. And I know that was very inspirational for you, because it sounds like you had both Sir Hillary Edmund and Tenzin Norway come and visit you. And I think, help me if I'm right, that the name of the town, a small little town, village really, was called Thame. Is that how you pronounce that?
The town I grew up is called Thame.
Thame, okay.
Thame is the pronunciation, which is very remote village. About at 12,500 feet.
So what's it like growing up in Thame?
Well, it's a small town. We all know each other. Grew up with 8 siblings. My parents gave a birth of 11 kids. 3 didn't survive, but 8 are still survive. And my dad used to be a mountain guide as well. And from my dad didn't get an opportunity to go to school because by then, when his generations, when he was young, there's no school exist. And then the school I went was built by Edmund Hillary after he summited Everest. It was founded in 1960. I was born in 1966. So the school was just born 6 years before I was born. So I got an opportunity to go to school, but, you know, I never get a chance to go to college, which is, my parents, have, like I said, they gave a birth of 11 kids and 3 didn't survive. 8 was still alive. And my father was the only source of income to support the kids, all those kids. And then after I finished my high school, 1984, as a being an older son, I have to take over to help support support to the families. Basically, my dad got a frostbite when he was climbing Pumori expeditions, and he no longer able to do what he used to do. So I have to take over and I start my career. 1984 was my first time to climb Mount Everest.
Oh my God, 1984 is the first time you got to climb Mount Everest. That is amazing. You know, you talked about you weren't able to go to college because your parents had 11 children and just trying to feed the family, and so they really needed help. You know, I can't imagine living at 12,000 feet in Nepal in a very remote village. Did you have electricity? Did you have internet? I mean, well, internet wasn't back in those days, but did you have electricity?
No, we didn't have electricity at all by then. We used to kerosene lamp, and then we used firewood. So when I was a kid, I always, when I'm not going to school, I will be out in a jungle to collecting a dead firewood. And so that used for our fuel sources. And then during the night, the kerosene lamp, or even those who cannot afford, they use this pine tree, which used to burn. So they use that as a lamp by then. So which is pretty tough. By then, it was very tough, you know. It's a very hard life.
So you know, well, at the same time, it was a very hard life, but you didn't know any better. It wasn't like you were growing up in the United States, you're in Seattle now, and you had electricity, and you could just go flip on a switch. It's just what you knew, right? And so I would also argue that your college was the mountains. Your college was growing up at extreme environment, in an extreme environment with, as you said, tough conditions with no electricity and everything. So, you know, you didn't really have a choice, but other than to be tough and learn to adapt to the different environment. Now, when you're trying to, I'm just trying to imagine this, you're in a remote village, and in terms of eating, and, you know, you've got your proteins there. So maybe there's some animals that you would take to market. But in terms of how do you grow things at 12,000 feet?
I mean, we still grew some stuff there. You know, during the summer, we got one crops every year, which is basically potatoes and spinach and chives. Those are pretty much what we grew up. And some places we grew up buckwheat, which is also annual crops. That's all we grew up. And then we keep the animals, yaks, which is for basically trading to Tibet or milking and for meat as well. By then, there's a market in Namche, which is about a 3-4 hours hike from my hometown. So every Saturday, there will be a market where you can trade things like, you know, whatever you don't grow up there, you can trade or buy things, stuff like that at the market. And yeah, the market still exists today, which is way bigger than it used to be before.
You know, you've climbed Kilimanjaro. I've been down to Tanzania twice now, and I've been in the Serengeti and actually witnessed villagers at a market, and their currency is a goat, you know? And so trading those and buying and selling, you know, things that they'd make, it was just fascinating to see. Mm-hmm. It's so different than, you know, obviously what I grew up with in Seattle, Washington. Okay, so let's get into how you transitioned into becoming a mountain guide, a mountain climber. I read that you were inspired. Obviously, your dad was a climber, and for many of the Sherpa, it's a way of life, and that's why so many Sherpa, it's very famous, you know, worldwide, what you guys do, your ability to get up and down mountains growing up at high altitude. But how did you break in? What was your big break to get you to actually on a team, expedition team, that would actually go climb Mount Everest?
You know, actually, it is a very inspiration for me when Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzin Sherpa visit our schools. They used to visit our school once a year during those days. And I always want to follow Tenzing's footstep. That was my dream. And then, you know, the other thing is, you know, like I said, there's no choice for us to, you know, do beside a climbing mountain. There's no other things exist or I can do by then. So, you know, it is very fortunate for me, and I got opportunity to do that in, with my cousin, my uncle, who was leading expeditions to Everest 1984. And I got opportunity to work with him. He provided me a job without having any experience. He gave me a 1 week of training in a base camp. And then I went from there. But that year, I didn't did a great, I didn't get that. I didn't did that good because I got caught by avalanche on a Hoche pace, and I'm not that used to the altitude. But I was always, you know, by then, basically by then, the expeditions, commercial expeditions are very rare. There's only few commercial expeditions. And so it is too hard to find a job. But I was always keen to do, you know, work hard, try to do my best. And since I've been to school a little bit, I spoke a little bit of English, not good as today, but that helps me too. So I got opportunity to go to Everest again 1990 fall, which is a Yugoslavian team. I was able to work with them. My English was pretty good among all of the Sherpas who are working for them. They choose me to work with them, route working, fixing lines and stuff like that. And I learned so much from this couple from Yugoslavia, Andre and Maria Strempel. They're the first couple to summit Everest, and I was chosen to be their Sherpas to go with them. So after I summiting Everest, my resume built up then it was easy to get more works. But today, you know, there is a lot of mountaineering schools like, you know, Kumbu Climbing School, which is one of the well-known climbing schools funded by a corner anchor friend of his, Alex Lowe, who was the die owner of Shishapangma South Pass. To honor to him, they started this school called Kumbu Climbing School. So today, everyone can go there and learn how to climb mountains and graduate from there. But when I was studying, there's no mountaineering school exist. So I have to be part of the team and learn from the team. So that's what pretty much I did.
Yeah, I love that. Conrad Anker has actually been on this podcast and had an awesome time talking to him and all of his trials and tribulations and climbing with Jimmy Chin and those things.
Yeah.
I know when things really took off for you, and I want to get into some actual climbs here in a minute, but when things really took off for you is when you had a connection with Tom Burleson. Tom Burleson is a guy that is the owner of Alpine Ascents. I've actually climbed with Tom, not with Tom, but with Alpine Ascents twice, once on Denali, and then last year, or 2019, January, I was in Antarctica climbing Vinson with Vern Tejas. You probably know Vern. So Vern has been on the podcast as well. But what was that connection with you and Tom that it seems like it's really involved into that's an anchor employment for you where you could really set your base down and bring your wife and your kids to Seattle and really start to build a foundation there? What was that for you?
Yeah, the first time I was in 1990, after I, even before I summited Everest, I got an opportunity to work with Todd. Since then, we become a very good friend. You know, since then, I always work for his expeditions, and he treat me very well. And then we become a very good friend. And then year 2000, he gave me an opportunity. He says, do you want to come to US and work for us? And this is a great opportunity. And I was a little bit scared by then too, because I never, thought that I would be, this is a huge country and I don't know what I will be get for. And I'm not used to it. I don't know how to drive and I don't even know how to biking by then. So it was a huge change for me, but But, you know, we had a very good relationships, you know. He's my boss, but I, you know, between him and me, we don't, he doesn't think that workers or boss, you know. We have a great relationship, we have a good friendship, and he gave me this opportunity, and I was able to come to the state, and then he treated me well, and I know I've been working hard as I could, you know, because of what he did it for me. I have to give it something to back. That was, I always think that way. And until today, I'm still working for him, and we still have a great relations, and which is one of the greatest thing that Todd gave me this opportunity. So today I'm able to bring all my whole families are living in a state, and especially, you know, for me, I have to work harder, but, you know, it is a great opportunity for my kids. And so they don't have to follow what I'm doing for a living.
No, that's great. Both your kids, I think, graduated from the University of Washington, which where I went to college, which is great stuff. Yeah. In terms of your responsibilities for Alpine Ascent, so for those that don't know, there are various outfitters like Alpine Ascent, like IMG, and others that create expeditions all over the world that the general public, you have to have a certain kind of resume, and there's opportunities to build up in a certain way, but you can go to Denali, you can sign up through Alpine Ascent. It's very organized. They've got great guides, and you can go to Denali, you can go to Aconcagua, you can go to Mount Rainier. There's all these mountains all over that the guides of Alpine Ascent and other outfitters like that can help get up the mountain. What is your primary responsibility now with Alpine?
I mean, you know, when I work in Nepal, I have a huge responsibility. My job by then was a guide and Sherder, which is the lead Sherpa for the team. And then also I do the bookkeeping, managing the all the expenses during the expeditions. And I'm also responsibility to hiring all of the Sherpas who work for Alpines back in Nepal. But as an international, when I work like Antarctica, Denali, or Vincent, or Rainier, it's a basic guide role. However, you know, all the guides has a pretty much same role, you know, responsibility for team, keeping the team safe, making the right decisions and things like that. But when I do this trip in Nepal, for example, for Everest, there's more responsibility. There's a lot of things that people don't see. It's all behind the scenes, you know, preparing, so shopping, buying things and preparing menus and preparing all the gears or whether the gears are ready for or not, putting all the loads and oxygens and everything in the base camp on one time, getting those to the higher camp at Camp 4 and it's on time before the summit attempts, and also taking care of all of the Sherpa stops, porters, and all these things. So there's a lot of behind the scene work that I have to involve with it.
Now let's talk about this year. So obviously this last year, last 12 months, it's been awful for the planet, awful for businesses. Everything is pretty much shut down. I was supposed to be on Everest last year. That got pushed out. I'm climbing with Madison Mountaineer, and you probably know Garrett.
Yeah.
Yep. And this year, you know, right now everything's a green light. So I'm assuming that you will be there at base camp in this year, 2021, correct?
Yeah, we're planning to go for it. I hope everything goes well. And the same thing with you, you know, for me here, we supposed to go to last year. And then because of, we bought everything, purchased, I packed everything and I bought my ticket. And just 2 days before I depart from here, everything closed down. And I think, which is great, you know, because the COVID is real and it spread out very fast. And, you know, which is a great thing. We It hurt to a lot of the climbing Sherpas back there, but it hurt all over the world. So, but I will definitely looking forward to going back this spring, and hopefully everything goes in a green and we all will have a great climb.
Yep, and is Ben leading it from Alpine Ascent? I don't know if and Ben, or how is that working?
We have a Ben leading the trip, and Zhangbo will be another Sherpa. He will be the guide, and I will be the base camp manager. Since 2014, after the accident, I decided not to guide Everest anymore, but I go there and run the expeditions from base camp as a base camp manager.
And now, are you talking 2014 accident? Are you talking about the earthquake or the
avalanche? No, 2013. 2013.
And what happened in 2013?
There was a huge ice collapse in a Khumbu ice fall. It was March 17th, I believe, and then killed 16 Sherpas that day. And then I was the first one to get to the scene from base camp to recover the dead body, and I lost five of my coworker. And then after that, something in my heart, something inside stopped me to doing this. But instead of guiding, I started going back to continues as a base camp manager to help those who've been working with me for long, long terms. If I didn't go, then someone will take over and they probably don't get hired by that person. So I started keep going back to support those who've been working with me for a long, long time.
That's great. That's great. And I certainly understand that. I mean, look, you've got nothing more to prove. You're a rock star. As I mentioned in the very opening set of this, to me, you're the Michael Jordan of climbing. And so, you know, shoot, you've been up there 17. I'm just trying to get up there once, right? Which is this time. And I train like crazy. I live here in Sun Valley, Idaho. I go up the mountain every day. I live at 6,000 feet. I go up and down the mountain 3,200 feet. And so I'm hoping that, you know, everything will get me to the top and back down, and I can become the first NFL player to climb the seven summits. I'm excited about that. Yeah, thank you. So, and I certainly hope to high five you at base camp for sure. That would be a great moment for me. Were you climbing? You mentioned like your first climb was 1984, I think. Were you there in 1996 when they had that gigantic mess?
Yeah, I was there with Todd, again, with Alpine Ascent, Todd Burleson and Peter Athens and Jim Whelan. Those are the guiding for Alpine trip. And we were supposed to be summiting 2 days behind whatever happened that day. And then Jim and myself took, because after what happened up there, our clients, they didn't want to keep continue. We were at Camp 3. So Jim and I took all of the clients down from Camp 3, and Todd and Peter Athens went to South Col to help those who got stuck up there. And basically, Todd and Pete helped Beckweather to get down from South Col.
Yeah, Beckweather, for those that you don't remember, is the guy that essentially lost his nose and all of his fingers and toes and was left to dead multiple times and ultimately made his way down. Incredible story. You know, again, we'll go back, and I got to say this. You know, you've had 17 summits of Everest. You've guided over 253 climbers to the top. You've done the seven summits, including Choi Yu, and you've done Baker and Rainier, again, in my home state. You've done so many different things. What advice to somebody who would be thinking about going and climbing Mount Everest, what advice would you have for somebody like me, for example?
No, like you, you have done a lot. You have climbed so much, which is great help. But there are, you know, there are some people, they haven't put a cramp on. They are thinking to climb Everest, which is, I will say, which is wrong. You know, before you go to Everest, you should train hard. You should practice to this little mountain. You know, all these mountains will teach you so many things. You know, start from your hometown if you have a mountain there. If not, then get to wherever there's a mountain, like, you know, climbing Mount Baker, Rainier, for example, if someone from Washington, we have so many mountain eggs. Here you have so many options, you know. Climb those mountains, test yourself how you do, how your body functioning to altitude. Those are the very important. And then other thing is you need to build up your not only physical but mental abilities too. A lot of time people are physically strong, and then once you go for these long expeditions, and then they're mentally, you know, not strong enough. Their mental, you know, because of their mental, they, you know, get a homesick. They get a homesick. They miss the wife. They miss the kid. Or they need to deal with the business or whatever. Once you decided to go to Everest, I will say that forget all of this for within those period, and then just focus on what you're doing, and one step at a time. Don't think too far behind. Then if you follow with the one step of the time, thinking about one day at the time, definitely you will be have a great time and successful expeditions. But I don't want to say that, you know, if someone, you know, who, like I said, who didn't even put a crampon, they shouldn't dream about going to Everest right away. Just practice it, test it yourself. You know, some people perform better on altitude, some people doesn't. You know, testing yourself on altitude is great. You know, you go like you have, you know, if you want to do a little bit higher expeditions to test yourself, there's Aconcagua, which is a great mountain. This is not technical. This is almost 7,000 meter peak. And people always can test your abilities on altitude there. Physical, you know, technical things you can learn from glaciated peak like Rainier, Denali, you know, Baker, or, you know, in the Alps too, as well. But I've never been to the Alps, so I don't know much about that. You know, there's a lot of options. So, you know, so test it before you think into going for the big one.
There's essentially four sections, as I see it, climbing up Mount Everest. You've got base camp, and getting through the Kumba ice field, and then there's Camp 1, Camp 2, Camp 3, Camp 4, and then to the top, right? Where do you see the hardest difficulty in climbing, if you were to break those sections down as you're going up the mountain?
I mean, you know, I will say most dangerous sections will be the icefall. Which is, you know, you never know what is happening, whether you're whenever you're crossing the icefall, it can be collapsed, or it can, you know, the ladder can be collapsed. This is just icefall. Is it like, say, river of the ice? It will follow downhill, so it can happen anything during you are in there. But as far as the hard for your physical, you know, getting to Camp 4 will be toughest because you are high on the mountain. You are above 24,000 feet, and you're still breathing oxygen, but a bottle of oxygen. But still, it is tough for you to physically tough. And then again, summit is the hardest. You know, a lot of time people say, "Oh, summiting Everest is easier because you have too many support." But you are high up there. Your oxygen can, whether it can function properly or not. There are so many things that you can rely on it, weathers and, you know, the device you're using it. You know, there's a few years ago, there was a oxygen mask get blown away on the north side, and then the whole team has to turn around. You know, things, those type of things can happen hard up the mountain, and then, you know, that's all what can do is turn around. But again, like, you know, how, if you think like a hard for your physical, definitely going to summit is the hardest. And then, I mean, going from Camp 1 to Camp 2 is pretty flat, you know. I mean, first time you go there, you feel a little bit of altitude, but there are not much of a physical exertions there. But when you go from Camp 2 to 3, 3 to 4, it's a about a 35-40 degree slope with ice, pretty much icy sections, which is pretty tough on your physical. And then again, summit, you know, you might breathe more oxygen summit day, but still It is high up there. It's above 8,000 meter peak. It's above 26,000 feet, higher above 26,000 feet, which is, you know, the oxygen is separate from your body. Even you're breathing from tank, it is hard, you know. So those are the sections I will say hardest one.
And of all the mountains you've done all over the world, which one brings you the most joy?
I mean, I enjoy every single mountains, whether it is a small or big, you know, it's a beautiful nature. You know, you're out there, you know, you don't hear all these noises, car and things, noises around you. Only you hear is like the wind and maybe ice, crevasse cracking, the noise of those, or a little bit of avalanche. This, for me, is I enjoy every single mountain, so wherever I work. It didn't matter, just Everest. I work on a Rainier. I'm always enjoyed there. I have a great time. I enjoy the nature there. Or if I'm working on a Baker, it's mountain. You're there. You know, a lot of time people think that, you know, Baker or Rainier is a small mountain. You have a less danger than Everest, but it's all same mountain. Each and every mountain have their own danger sections. They all have a crevasse. They all have a avalanche hazard. So, you know, we all have to respect, whether it is a small or big mountain, we have to respect same way.
I love Mount Rainier. I looked at it every day out my window, and finally in 1998 decided, you know what, I'm going to go climb that. And I did. I've been up on up to Muir numerous times. Once was with Ed Veesters. That was a big thrill for me. And you know, in terms of my one of my favorites, certainly, and you've been there 13 times, Vincent, down in Vincent Massif down in Antarctica. It's just such a unique place in the world to be. You know, there's no place like it, right?
Yeah, Vincent is one of the unique places, definitely. You know, it's too far away. It's very remote. You know, it's pretty cold, but I mean, you have all the gears you keep you warm there. You know, it's one. I will say it's very beautiful and unique. One of the most unique places to go is Antarctica, Vincent Massif.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. So, in terms of, I know you're staying essentially in at base camp and running that on Everest, and that's a huge job. And for those that don't know, you're essentially up there for 2 months. But guiding around the world, I would assume that you're still going to continue to climb. It's just you're not going to the top of Everest. That's the difference.
Yeah, that's true. I've been guiding all other places. Like I was in Vincent. Last year, I wasn't able to go because of this COVID thing, but I was there for like 14 season now in Vincent. I guided Kilimanjaro, I guide Denali, I got Rainier, Baker, so Choyu, Armand Ablam, all other peaks beside Everest, I still guiding. And then I also guided K2 a while ago, but I didn't went to K2 for after 2013. I got a few people to go with, but after that accident, I decided not to go to K2 either.
K2 is not on my list. I don't want to mess with that one, you know. But listen, thank you so much for coming on this pod. You're truly a jewel within the climbing community. Christy Myers had reached out to me and said, you've got to get this guy on your pod. And so I researched, you know, like, holy smokes. And I found out you're living in Seattle, and it's going to be a big thrill for me to run into you over in Nepal at Mount Everest Base Camp. Hopefully, knock on wood, we can all go, and really look forward to that meeting. So anyways, blessed luck to you on your journeys forward and all the things that you do, and, you know, giving back to your country in Nepal. And it's just been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me with your podcast. And I will wish you all the best and looking forward to seeing you in Everest.
Right on. I appreciate it. Okay, there he is, the one, the only Laka Rica Sherpa. There he goes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.